You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending November 20, and it's podcast number 66. I'm Joe Elia. Ezetimibe is the focus of our conversation this time. A study presented at the American Heart Association scientific meetings this week shows that extended-release niacin is superior. First, this review of recent important clinical news stories. It was the week of controversial guidelines. First, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, also known as USPSTF, recommended against routine mammography for average-risk women in their 40s, a decision to which political commentators immediately attached political importance. Clinically, what the new guidelines say is that average-risk women between 50 and 70 should be screened every 2 years. What constitutes average risk is left up to the clinician and the patient to arrive at together. And at the end of the week, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists suggested that women undergo their first cervical screening not at the age of first intercourse, but at 21. In women over 30 who've had 3 consecutive negative screenings, repeats should be done at 3-year intervals. Thank goodness the guidelines are available for free, and you'll find a link to them on the website, podcasts.jwatch.org. Also this week, the FDA approved a new treatment for shingles-related pain. It's a patch containing the active ingredient in chili peppers, and it should be applied for 60 minutes, but first, a topical anesthetic must be applied. Now let's go to our conversation. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. The American Heart Association's scientific meetings took place this week, and there were several papers offered simultaneously in the meeting rooms and in major journals. The New England Journal of Medicine released online a study, the Arbiter 6 HALTS trial, also presented at the AHA. It showed that ezetimibe was inferior to extended-release niacin in patients with coronary heart disease or at high risk for it. Researchers randomized over 350 patients to receive a 14-month course of either ezetimibe or niacin, along with their long-term statins. The study was halted early when niacin's superiority was shown and just over 200 patients had completed the regimen. In those patients, niacin was associated with a reduction in their mean carotid artery intima media thickness, an increase in HDL cholesterol, and with a lower incidence of cardiovascular events. We have the paper's first author to add details and discuss implications with us. He's Alan Taylor, Director of Advanced Cardiovascular Imaging at the Washington Hospital Center Cardiovascular Research Institute in Washington, D.C., and he's Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Cardiovascular CT. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Taylor.
Thank you, Joe. Happy to be here.
I wanted to ask whether you were surprised to see 2 editorials about your study in the New England Journal of Medicine. That was quite unusual in my experience.
Certainly there have been other papers with 2. I took it as a sign that this is a major paper and it really challenges what we think. And so, yeah, we were happy for the interest that 2 editorials expressed about the paper.
Going in, you considered this major work then?
Yeah, we conceived this trial, you know, 4 to 5 years ago. At the time, after we presented a trial about niacin and its effects on the carotid wall compared to placebo. And then the expert commentator at the American Heart meeting also presented a late-breaking trial. He said, these results are interesting on niacin, but we don't know how it compares to LDL lowering. Hmm. And so we said, ask the question, let's compare it to LDL lowering. And that's where the idea for HALTS came from.
Huh. So both editorialists bemoaned the fact that the trial had to stop early. And can you give us a little background on the basis for the decision to stop?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of concern about nothing, frankly. I mean, in fact, if you read through their comments, you see at the end of the day, they say that they believe the overall trial results, which is that showing niacin was superior to ezetimibe for artery wall thickness. What they're really arguing about is the semantics of, you know, the trial conduct, and it was pre-specified we would conduct this interim analysis, which was solely conceived on the fact that the sample size was based on old methodology for artery wall thickness measurement, and we had, in this trial, enacted multiple major refinements that would improve precision, which did so dramatically. And so on that basis, we'd planned an interim analysis, and in fact, the trial results were very clear. And really, it doesn't distort the overall trial interpretation. In fact, the primary endpoint was convincingly met. So, you know, one can argue about that if the trials were negative. Certainly, there's some things you lose. You lose some power within secondary analyses, but that's really a debate about, you know, what trials or questions trials are designed to answer and what questions trials are not designed to answer. But in the end, you know, this comes down to the simple clinical question. If you're taking care of patients in a trial, you know, this was done on the behalf of those patients. You know, the trial results were clear, and it was necessary for the trial to stop. There's really no right or wrong answer here, for sure. I can see how some people would believe the trial should continue. But in the end, each patient in that trial had signed a contract with us on their consent form saying that they were really just helping us answer one question, and that is the effect of these drugs on the artery wall. So while an editorialist may disagree with the concept of stopping the trial early, the patients in the trial had the question they had signed up to answer was answered, and so on their behalf, the trial was stopped.
All right. And in fact, one of the editorialists was very complimentary on the technique that you used to measure that the artery wall thickness.
Yeah, the results were very precise, meaning that the primary endpoint analysis is very clear.
Yeah. Not to harp on this, but they both said that they wish, of course, that every editorialist has got a wish list, but these wish that you could have done the analysis on all the patients enrolled and not just the ones that completed the 14 months of therapy. Are you intending to do that analysis?
Yeah, in fact, yes. The great question. We actually have those data in hand on the full sample size, so, and I can tell you that we'll be putting those data together quite shortly in support of the analysis we published on the 208 individuals from the interim analysis. So more to come, but don't expect a lot of new insights.
All right. Thank you. What about the implications for practicing clinicians and cardiologists? I'm thinking in particular, primary care clinicians. What ought they know about this? Even if they're patients, some of their patients are seeing cardiologists. What ought they know about it?
Well, I think there's a few things. One is, you know, in this day and age, we have a few questions to ask about the therapies we use, and they are: first of all, does the drug work? And then, how well does the drug work compared to other drugs that I might alternatively select? And that's the way this trial is conceived, as a comparative effectiveness trial to compare this common clinical strategy of using niacin, which clinicians generally think about when the HDL cholesterol is low, and this concept of trying to further decrease LDL cholesterol. And there's many approaches to doing that, but one that's been, you know, relatively commonly adopted is this idea of using ezetimibe. And when it comes to clinical efficacy, you know, we don't really know how well ezetimibe works. There are no outcomes data for ezetimibe beyond its effect on the surrogate of LDL. And ezetimibe has a very unique mechanism of action. So I think it's a fair comparison. Mm-hmm. And so it's this idea of what's the efficacy of the drugs we use, and then how does it compare? And this trial can't answer the question of efficacy of ezetimibe. That's a subject of other studies with different designs. This trial can address the question, and did address the question, of how ezetimibe and niacin compare for their effectiveness, in this instance for the surrogate endpoint of artery wall thickness. And there the results are clear, is that a predominantly HDL-focused approach of using niacin in these patients that were already on statins was superior to a predominantly LDL-focused approach of adding ezetimibe, again, when the LDLs at the start of the trial were in the low 80s. And the HDLs were below 50 for men or 55 for women. So the implications here, I think, is that this data really adds to our understanding of these two drugs and how they compare. It adds to our understanding of using niacin as a drug to to change the lipid profile, which includes not just raising HDL, but also lowers LDL and triglycerides along with it. And that's an approach which has been shown in the past to simply do exactly what we found. You know, the labeling for various prescription forms of niacin is that it improves cardiovascular mortality, MI rates, and actually leads to regression of atherosclerosis. And in this instance, with respect to atherosclerosis, you know, we can say that we found the same result.
One of the results that you saw was that there were more cardiovascular events in the people on ezetimibe, and you speculate a little bit about the biological basis for that. The paradox that you point out, that the people whose LDLs were lowered most on ezetimibe were also the people whose artery thickness increased, showed an increase.
Right. So I think, I think in answer to your question, I would say a few things. You know, the number of events were, I would say they were lower in the niacin arm. I wouldn't say that, ezetimibe increased anything. I would say that niacin was associated with lower cardiovascular event rates.
Fair enough.
And that's actually not a novel result necessarily either. In some of the also smaller trials which have shown similar results, it's when niacin is included as a component of combination therapy. But I'd stop short of saying that the endpoint results are definitive because the numbers are small. And with respect to niacin, or most definitely ezetimibe, you know, how much it adds to cardiovascular endpoint reduction is an active question of investigation. And the HDL trial with niacin going on is named Aim High, and that's an NIH-sponsored trial. And the IMPROVE-IT trial is a industry-funded trial addressing ezetimibe. So I would, again, cast this on the side to say that, you know, there was a lower event rate with niacin, and that really, I would say, recapitulates some findings from other small trials regarding outcomes of niacin-based combinations. The paradox that we observed, I would also lay some crepe around just to simply say it was a, you know, post hoc analysis. I would regard it as hypothesis generating. Mm-hmm. But it runs a little bit counter to our intuitive understanding of what LDL reduction should have done in these patients and was very different than the relationship observed with niacin. So what I would say to that is that, it deserves further study. Drugs have very diverse effects in patients. And, you know, although, for instance, one of the commentaries from one of the reviewers, one of the commentaries from Dr. Kasselein, one of the editorialists, was that they haven't observed that similar effect in the enhanced patients, and those are patients with familial hypercholesterolemia. But this is a very different patient population. You know, that's a genetically very homogeneous population. In HALTS, we have a very diverse population, not of FH, familial hypercholesterolemia, but of dyslipidemic patients. And so to suggest that, you know, drugs act uniformly across populations, I think is a little bit uncertain in my viewpoint. So I think with the finding, you know, it runs a little bit counter to our understanding of what ezetimibe is and how it works, or how we don't really know how it works. It's an evolving database on how ezetimibe actually works to lower LDL cholesterol. And so this is a call to understand what we know and understand what we don't know. What do we know about ezetimibe? It lowers LDL. What don't we know? We don't know how that relates to clinical endpoints. What are we continuing to learn? We're continuing to learn exactly how it works. And, in the future, we will learn more about this drug. And until then, as long as patients hear from their doctors that I'm going to put you on this drug, but I don't know what it's going to do for your longevity, mm-hmm. or your freedom from any heart disease problems, I think then that's an open discussion about what we do and don't know about, you know, ezetimibe. Mm-hmm. And that's no different than what you get in the direct-to-consumer ads on ezetimibe. That is that it lowers cholesterol, but has not been proven to improve, you know, cardiovascular events. Mm. So I think that's fair and open disclosure, and I would give that to clinicians. You know, I think the oncologists have one up on us in some regards. You know, they're pretty open about discussing what drugs do and don't do that they prescribe because the drugs have a lot of toxicities in oncology, and, you know, their patients are looking at those drugs as a lifeline, and they want to know how well is what you're giving me going to work. Well, I think for novel compounds, new compounds, compounds we don't have a complete database on, maybe that's the direction we should head in. Mm. Maybe there should be fair and full disclosure to patients that, you know, we're going to use this drug. We know it seems reasonably tolerable, but there are things we don't know. Let me disclose those to you, and then you can make an informed decision if you want to take it or not. I think if we were in that place, we'd be in a much better position right now using new compounds clinically, while each of them prove their efficacy in their own right through clinical trials.
I can't tell you how many times these questions boil down to, well, you ought to talk it over with your patient.
And talking it over with your patient, I think, is more these days than a discussion of oh, you know what, it's all fine, ignore the information, and it's all fine, take this pill. I think patients are savvier than that these days.
Yeah.
And, for instance, you know, a patient should know, what are the data on titration of statins? What does that provide for me in terms of, you know, my outcomes from heart disease or my risk of heart disease? You know, what are the data on the addition of ezetimibe? What is that going to supply? What is that going to provide to me? What is the data on the addition of niacin, and what is that going to provide to me? How well are the drugs selected? Because let's face it, these are not short-term therapies, right? These are not, you know, one week, take this antibiotic and, go on your merry way. These are long-term decisions, and they have to be entered, I think, with a lot of thoughtfulness that the right decision has been made, and then you can go forward. I would just suggest that that clinicians, as they approach this, recognize what we do and don't know about the therapies we use. And in the area of lipidology, while there's a lot of great potential for LDL reduction through novel means, you know, ezetimibe is a novel compound, and its database for endpoint efficacy is incomplete. And so, you know, have that conversation with your patient. You know, we'll tell them what we know, tell them what we don't know. And then the patients can decide if they want to do that, or if they want to titrate their statin, they want to take niacin. What I do know is that there's a lot of patients in the country that will fall under the entry criteria of Arbiter 6. You know, this is patients with high risk for heart disease, diabetics, or known heart disease, or multiple cardiovascular risk factors. And so a lot of patients are, that fits the profile of a lot of patients in this country. And these are patients on statins with LDLs in the 80s that are on a typical 40 milligram dose of a statin. So well dosed with statins. And their HDLs are below 50 or 55, which are pretty much the population median values.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of patients are going to fall under this area of being potentially eligible for this question of what should I take next, doctor? And in this instance, you know, niacin was clearly superior for this endpoint of artery wall thickness. You know, how does that relate to what clinical events would be? I think we'd need larger studies to really fully know.
All right.
Until then, we can wait for trials like Improve It and Aim High to sort of round out our database on clinical endpoint efficacy of these therapies. And then we can really be confident about what we know and what we don't know.
Well, that's great advice. And I look forward to the follow-up on those patients that's in the works now. And I want to thank you very much for your time with me this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
You can reach Clinical Conversations at 1-617-440-4374. Or you can write to me, jelia@jwatch.org. All earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for all news stories can also be found. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time. Thank you for listening.